I promise this will be a really short talk because configurations are simple, right? You just sort of write it and then it works and then you're done and you never have to deal with it again. Okay, I was hoping for more laughter, but I think it was the stricken panic of, oh, this isn't going to be good. So I want to kind of look at where are we in configurations and then go, really? Really? And then we can figure out how we get ourselves out of the mess we've gotten ourselves into. But that requires us to really recognize the mess. So when did this get complicated? And I think there was a shift, because before you probably bought a server that was a real piece of metal. You configured it once, and then it went and ran your webmail or DNS server or whatever, and you never had to deal with it again. It would just happily sit there and serve, and 6 months to a year later, you might go and do some upgrades and have to fiddle with the configuration then, but by and large, it didn't need constant reconfiguration. Once we get into the whole cloud cluster thing, you're constantly reconfiguring, you're constantly updating, you're constantly changing the topology of the software that you're dealing with. And that's new. The other thing that changed, and this started happening, I think, in the late 90s with the three-layer, multi-tier enterprise thing going on, is before, you had a DNS server, and it was the DNS server, and there was the config file for the DNS server, and that was more or less it. It had some on-disk state. But now the application has spread out. It has sort of metastasized into, there's the web front end and the middleware and the cache and the database, and they sort of have to know about each other, and we can update them independently, and they have different configurations that kind of affect each other, but the list goes on and on and on about how integrated the components have become. So the logic of your application as a user sees it is now spread out across several binaries, depending on how do the Googlers want to sigh and go, like 5 million binaries. No, but certainly more than the one application that you used to be developing. The other thing that's changed is once you have a system like this, how do you test it? If I have a simple server I compile it, I run make, I compile it, and I start it up on my desktop, I can send it some test queries. Once it's spread out across 6 different binaries that each have complicated configurations, that doesn't work anymore. You can't reasonably expect a developer to bring up the subset of the production system that they need to effectively test anything. So what makes configurations complicated in a simple way? Part of the thing, and this is one of the wars I have with people a lot, is complexity is a function of the semantics of our configuration systems, not the formats. Whether your configuration is, command line arguments or INI files doesn't matter to how complex that system is to configure. We also have this conflict. We would like to be lazy. We want to write very simple configurations and have the system do as much work as possible to elaborate them. So we want to write something terse. At the same time, terseness means that things are being inferred for us. And when those things change behind our back, they blow up in our faces. You have some default change on you, and now the behavior is completely different. And it's not necessarily that the binary changed, it's just that the default and the configuration changed. We also stick all these macro languages in front of it, so we have to write less. We can be more terse, but those add additional behavior, and now we're really talking about programming. And to make that even worse, we have these embedded programming languages, and I'm going to talk about them in detail and try to separate out the difference between a macro language and an embedded programming language. So the other thing that's useful is to think of how a configuration comes to be. If this was the binary that I wrote to run on my laptop to do the thing I want, there would be no configuration file, because everything that's worth doing is hard-coded into the binary. So building a configuration is this horrible extraction process by which someone says, that thing that is 7, that can't be 7, I need to change that. So configuration is this slow process where we pull out bits of the binary, pull out constants and logic, and try to put them in this file so that we can change them without recompiling the binary. We generally think of configuration as, you know, something like etc something.conf in the really old kind of Unix-y way. But there's also the command line arguments, the build time arguments in a lot of cases, environment variables, information that's in the database. And as I've said before, the format doesn't really matter. You can say, oh, well, like command line arguments and this config file and the environment variables, I could just write a shell script that, you know, sets all that up, right? Now you have one config file. All of these different config formats are effectively transmutable. So whatever works for one, if you have a preference that, you know, oh, command line arguments are the greatest thing ever and I don't want to deal with anything else, then like, sure, if that makes you happy. But it doesn't really change the semantics of how the configuration works. You're going to change? There we go. So we achieve terseness in configs in two ways, macros and default propagation. So macros are basically some little programming language that runs before the binary starts, and that's the distinction I want to make between embedded programming languages, that copies out bits of the configuration. You use it to make little cookie cutters so that you don't have to write the same thing over again. And usually that expansion happens in the binary, so you don't get to see it. So you really don't know what it's doing. If you are using something like M4 or Python or whatever, and you know, you can run it separately and say, OK, here's the config that I'm actually feeding into the binary, that's nice. We also have default propagation. That's basically, I don't want to say it, you figure it out for me. So we allied parameters from the configuration. The other strange default propagation is the override system that, oh, you have this config file, and then you know you set the TTL for each of these you know database connections or whatever. And then on the command line, you can change that and override all of them. So now you've just put the same configuration in two different places, but once the binary runs, it's only going to be in one place. So in the paper that is accompanied with this, that will be in the proceedings, I went and took a look at some you know common everyday open source Unix-y kind of servers and looked at their config files. And I wanted to see what kind of default propagation systems they had, macro languages, and embedded programming languages. So I found out that there were roughly four categories of default propagation schemes. You have local, global, binary default. So you can imagine that for cups, you get to say, oh, for this printer, this is the maximum number of pages I want. If that isn't there, then use the printer class default. If that isn't there, then whatever the maximum baked into the cups binary is what I want. There's also the flip version of that where you know, use the override one that I have provided in the global section. If not, use the one specified locally on the per item configuration. Otherwise, use the default. Some of them give you control. Those don't. You just it follows whatever logic there is in the binary. Some of them let you have some kind of templating system, so you get to have some control about where your defaults come from. Asterisk does this a lot, where you can say, OK, this phone is like that phone, except change these things. And you get to control the path through which your defaults get copied. And then there's the model that Apache uses, which is the model that Apache uses. There, I also looked at some of the macro configurations and the embedded programming languages. So before I get to the next slide, I am required to tell you there are four exits to this auditorium, two in the front, two in the back. Please locate the exit nearest to you. It may be behind you. In the front seat pocket, you will find a bag in case you feel sick. Apache allows you to change most of the configuration based on the query parameters. That means you can set security and authentication parameters based on what browser the user is using. That sounds like a good time. Apache and Nginx's rewriting rules are Turing complete. Some nice fellow has created a Towers of Hanoi solver in mod rewrite. So if you'd like to solve your Towers of Hanoi problem in the worst, slowest possible way, that would be my choice. Bind, I mentioned that there are different default propagation schemes. Bind has different default propagation schemes depending on the parameter. There's a notify parameter and there's a dial-up parameter. One of them, the local, always wins. The other, the global, always wins. That's easy to remember. Bind also has a query rewriting system. I was totally grossed out to learn that mod rewrite exists for DNS. Fortunately, it's not Turing complete. It's slightly saner. I looked at make because I had to have one build system in there because build configurations are always a good time. And I thought, maybe I should look at one of the Java ones. And then I said, nah, make is saner. Make contextually determines whether it should do lazy or eager evaluation of your parameters. It also does an integrated configuration. If you think of make as a scheduler for executing jobs, which is basically what it really is, right? Run these things in the correct order. It operates by rounds of macro expansion and checking the file system and then back. So its behavior is really only deterministic between the configuration, the environment, and the file system. Asterisk has this goto function. And the goto function, actually, you give it a label of the rule that you want to go to in its handling of how to deal with incoming calls. It does template expansion on that, like string substitution on those labels. So if you want to branch based on, you know, did the user hang up, you basically go, oh, branch to foo-$call status. And then it gets to that line. It says, oh, well, the call status was hung up. So I'll branch to foo-hung up. Yeah, that's what I want. I want user input to determine the jump addresses in my program directly. I'll just take their user ID and, you know, jump to it with my x86 next time I write code. So the language theoretic security people call these things weird machines. If you think of Apache URL rewriting as a Turing-complete language, then every incoming URL is a program that is executed on the mod rewrite virtual machine. So URLs are a strange bytecode for this weird machine. These things are easy to exploit. I mean, they're hard to exploit because no one knows what the bytecode is, but once you figure it out, you exposed a virtual machine that has all kinds of ties into your system. That's great. So whether you think of a particular binary as exploitable or not now depends on your configuration. You can make Apache more exploitable through your configuration of the rewriting system. And we get all the wonderful things that we get with Turing completeness. Like, does this URL rewriting scheme do what I want? Don't know. Turing complete, can't tell you. And again, with asterisk, like, yeah, let's jump based on user data. But what could go wrong? The other thing that our configurations really lack is composability. And this has significantly changed with cloud configuration. That when you're doing the configuration, you have a tied configuration between the binary that you're trying to configure and the cloud environment that you're configuring it on, right? You want to make sure that I am running this application, which happens to be running in a JVM that's running in a Docker image. And hey, all of these things need to know about memory, and they all need to more or less agree on the amount of memory that we're talking about, or something's going to go really, really wrong. So I would love to give you some examples of good configuration, but we don't have any. The best one I found has been LDAP. There are lots of systems that let you embed LDAP queries and can do the correct, okay, you wanted me to filter it like this, and here's the things that I know about the user, and I can combine those and talk to the LDAP directory and get back the things that I want in a sane way. That is pretty amazing compared to how everything else does it. Almost everything else does it through like string substitution and gee, I hope you don't do any bad escaping. Good luck with that. We need to make that go away really badly. So how should we do this? We should separate the macro languages and the default propagation out of the binary, move them into their own system where we can make them easier to understand. These embedded programming languages need to die. they either need to be made less weird, or we should replace them with either existing programming languages or things that look, if we're writing a virtual machine, let's write a real virtual machine and treat it sensibly. So we should build a configuration languages that can handle composition easily. And one of the things that comes up a lot that I get asked is, should we have like a uniform configuration format, that every binary is going to be configured using the one true format? And I always say, you mean the Windows registry? And they go, no. There is certainly advantages to doing it, but I don't see it as a worthwhile short-term goal, because A, we're not going to get everyone on board in any short order, and two, I don't think we could agree on that format. And if you go look at the Windows registry for how it's abused, we don't agree on that format. So how do you build a not-so-weird machine? Well, the simplest thing you can do, if you need Turing-complete behavior as input to your binary, is just use an existing scripting language. There are lots. I don't care which one. A coworker of mine made the point that, like, oh, you know, Lua, Forth. How many people know Lua and Forth? Like, those are obscure languages. I don't want to have to learn that. He's like, OK, you invent a new programming language. You know how many people will know that? Zero. Like, the chance you'll get an applicant who knows Forth might be infinitesimal, but it's not zero, which it definitely is if you write your own. And if you really need to make your own virtual machine, which sometimes happen, at least make it a real virtual machine and not a weird machine. The simplest thing to do is define a bytecode and implement a virtual machine. And if you do it like that, one, it's stupid easy to parse and easy to build. You can optimize it because, hey, if you're already running on a virtual machine like Java, the JVM, or the Common Language Runtime, both of them have interfaces that say, here's some bytecode, load it, give me back more or less a function pointer to what I just compiled. That's really what you want. And they'll do the verification for you, not that doing the verification is hard. And it also gives you a way to debug that you never had before. When logic goes wrong in some twisty mod rewrite system, what do you get? I have no idea. But if it's a regular virtual machine, then I can just crash, give you the state of the virtual machine as debugging output, and you can actually debug that because you already know how to do that kind of debugging. That also means I can give you a simulator for it, right? Just carve out the piece of code that does that and say, here, test your program. And that also means you get built-in documentation. You have all these bytecodes, you tell me how they manipulate the machine state, and hey, I know exactly how to program for it. And that means people can build tools on top of it instead of having to do weird guessing and string substitution. So we need to start building configuration languages that have sensible default propagation policies built into them, that provide us with inbuilt mechanisms to do composability, and that can allow us to write semantically meaningful configurations that take care of all the details about how we actually get that out and shipped across the world. And I want all the comforts that I've expected of a normal programming language. I want strong types, I want debugging, I want sensible libraries. I don't want to have to deal with this M4 nonsense. So why not just use a traditional programming language? If they were good at it, we'd be using them. Most imperative languages are all about determining our data flow, and when we're doing configurations, we generally don't care. We just kind of want things to, like, give me the end state, I don't care how you got there. And you're going, OK, that sounds like functional languages. But most of our existing functional languages care heavily about the format of our data. And since configuration has always been this ad hoc process, we're going to be changing that tomorrow. And I don't want to have to update all of my configuration to deal with the fact that you've added a new parameter that I'm not using yet. There also have all of these things which are effectively baggage. Most programming languages are concerned about I/O. I do not want a configuration language that does I/O. Please no. Like, I want it to be totally deterministic. I don't want it to have to know about the file system and the outside world. I want to say, this is my configuration. Tell me what you would do to the binary. So I did a quick survey of some of the existing ones. I am the author of Flabbergast, so you know it's obviously the best. What's interesting about these languages, I went, if you get the proceedings, I categorize them, look at them differently, and there aren't overlying themes yet. I think that indicates how young this world is. So they're mostly functional. Most of them use prototype inheritance, but certainly not all. There are some which use dynamic scoping. And I think that's interesting because in the regular programming space, dynamic scoping has been dead and replaced with lexical scoping since the 80s, if not earlier. Some of them provide schema validation, but not all. And they're all very immature. They don't have the kinds of libraries and tools that we're used to. So I want you to go home or to your office, wherever you sleep. And I want you to look at your config files and tell me what they really are. What in them is actually a programming? How many accidental programming languages have you put into the configurations of your binaries? Then take them out. Stop writing them. And try to delegate configuration manipulation to a real configuration language that can do it properly. And I'd like to thank these people for taking care of me and listening to my ranting and getting it down to a coherent 20 minutes. Thank you.